Support for this podcast comes from Frito-Lay and the 2023 Snack Bracket Championship. The Frito-Lay Snacker Challenge is underway, and fans are voting on their favorite snacks to crown champion. We're talking about primetime matchups between the best 64 snacks in the land. Will Ruffles Ridges reign supreme? Can Doritos defend their dynasty? Or will Smart Food use their smarts for a surprise upset? Only you can decide. Get in on all the action for a chance to win up to $1,000 or a year's worth of snacks. Let your snacks be heard. Just go to FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com to vote and enter for a chance to win. No purchase necessary. Sweepstakes ends April 3rd, 2023. Void where prohibited. Year's worth of snacks awarded in the form of 52 coupons, each good for one bag of chips. See official rules at FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com.
Welcome back into the Cars Podcast. Mike Rutherford here with Danny Sennard. It's been a while since we've had to do one of these. With there being no sports for 6 months, we haven't had to talk about a Louisville loss in a long time and kind of readjusting our expectations. But here we are. We're going to talk primarily today in this episode about the Cards' loss to Miami from Saturday night. And usually we do these reaction shows earlier in the week, or we want to do these reaction shows earlier in the week, but it's been kind of tough to bounce back from this one. Cards, not a huge shock that they lose this game. They did wind up being, I think, 2-point underdogs by the time kickoff rolled around. I know I picked Miami to win the game. You and Keith, Danny, kind of were a little bit more confident than I was. But I don't think any Louisville fan would have been shocked to find out that Louisville was going to lose this game. It was the way in which it happened, which still has people a little bit, shocked. So we're going to get to all that good stuff. Before we do, Danny, how are you? I know you were at the river over the weekend. You got really, really drunk for a Louisville game for the second time in as many weeks. Have you recovered from that outing?
Yeah, Saturday we were down at Barron River with three other families. It was a good time. We had a great time. A lot of kids, that are around our kids' age, so it made it a lot easier. But yeah, I was this sports weekend in general with Louisville, Miami. You had the U.S. Open. Obviously me and you follow the Reds closely. So we had our eye on sports, pretty much the whole weekend. And yeah, this one was, it was tough to swallow. It's one of those losses to where after the game's over, there are some losses I like to analyze and maybe jump in Twitter and see what people are saying, but God, I just felt really bad after the game, and it's one of those losses I didn't really want to revisit and just kind of wanted to get away from it all.
Yeah, let's say we can go a little inside baseball here and talk about the fact you and I both, we're not all on the same page with all of our favorite teams, but on Saturday, we had a collective, all-time awful sports fan day, and we were so excited about going in. So Danny and I are in a fantasy golf league where we're a team, and we alternate picking one golfer. I won't bore you with the details, but we suck at it. We're really bad. There's 15 teams in this league. We're near the bottom, but we had a chance to bounce back. Majors are worth double points in this league. And if nothing else, if you pick the winner and nobody else does, you get money for that week. So we would have made money. We would have gotten our entry fee back at least. We picked, because we're so far back, we picked Patrick Reed, because we didn't think anybody else was going to have him. We were right. On Saturday, he's legit leading at the turn on the third round of a major. And by the end of the round, he's, I think, 8 shots back of Wolf, and they end up finishing 15 shots back of Bryson DeChambeau. So that was awful. Louisville's getting its shit kicked in the first half. I flip over at halftime just in time to see the Reds give a back-to-back-to-back. I mean, moonshot.
Yeah, they were all bombs.
I was like, okay, this is a fucking joke. It was unbelievable how bad the sports they got, how quickly it did. And so we're kind of going back and forth. We're like, this is just this is an all-time moment. And then, of course, the Lions bounced back on Sunday with just a disastrous performance against the Packers for me. And then did the Vikes win for you?
No, Vikes, there's a chance they might not win 4 games this year. It's going to be a long year for the Vikes.
The worst thing about when Louisville's going through a rough patch or a rough season, football or basketball, is then I have to turn to my pro sports team, and I'm like, at least I've got the Lions and the Reds. Nothing. The individual tennis players and the golfers that I cheer for are now all getting old. They're not good. And then if the Cards aren't carrying, it's pretty rough, and I know you're kind of in the same boat.
Yeah, I mean, all in all, I mean, we texted the whole day. I mean, the Friday night excitement we had, we're like, what a day on Saturday. This is going to be fantastic. Game day, like biggest game for the Reds in years. Patrick Reed leading. And then by like Saturday night, like we were like, okay, I'm absolutely hammered. This is miserable.
He stole our souls. I mean, nobody likes Patrick Reed. He's an awful human being. Sold our souls to go with Patrick Reed because we're like, well, we don't think anybody else will have him. And out of the pick, he probably has the best chance. So, like, we just completely, you know, give our sports souls away to root for this guy for 72 hours, and he just, of course, completely lets us down. The unraveling was quick and extreme. Speaking of game day, did you? I know you were at the river. Did you have a chance to watch the show at all Saturday morning?
I walked in on it a couple times. I honestly didn't really sit down to watch it too much. From what I gathered, it sounded like the analysts were kind of admitting that they were there because there wasn't any other big games on the docket, which, I mean, is a little disappointing, but I do kind of understand it. But I didn't get to really watch too much of it.
It was almost condescending, like, because everybody knows why you're in Louisville. Like, everybody knows it was supposed to be Alabama-Georgia week, or I think Michigan was supposed to have a big game where they maybe Notre Dame. I don't even know who they were supposed to play. But, like, the whole – first of all, it was a Big Ten infomercial. They spent – out of that 3 hours of talking, they probably spent 2 hours and 15 minutes talking about the Big Ten coming back. And it was just kind of like they were patting this game on the head and calling it cute the entire time. It was just kind of annoying. And also, I know we gave a shout-out to our guy Chris Abel for making the Dumpster Dan says Go Ka sign. Was not featured prominently on the show. I don't know who to call out for that. I don't know if it's Lottie Stockwell. If it is, I'm calling you out, Lottie. We could have had that featured way more prominently. Would have appreciated that. So that was kind of a buzzkill for me. The day got off on a bad foot. And then we had, I guess, the most controversial moment of the show. Bill Murray winds up being the game day guest picker, which we all love Bill Murray, but we probably could have had somebody more closely tied to the university. I know for a fact that U of L presented the game day crew, the ESPN crew, with Donovan Mitchell on a platter. I know that was their recommendation. They hooked that whole thing up, and game day said we'd rather go the Bill Murray route here. And Murray, to be honest, we love having him as a fan. I don't think he can name two players in the team. And every time he shows up at a game, we lose. So kind of a negative on this one. I don't know. It just kind of the whole day got started. And then the game started. Didn't go very well. But you made mention of it, and I totally agree with this. It's not really a difficult game to talk about, to break down. I mean, the offense was good. Malik Cunningham, who's now back to Malik. He's not McHale anymore. He struggled a little bit early on, but was good in the second half. He certainly was good enough. Javion Hawkins is awesome. People that we knew were awesome, they're still awesome. And the defense wasn't good for most of the game, but they were good enough for most of the game outside of three plays. It's the three broken plays that completely changed the tide of the game. And I know Keith Wynn broke down the stats. On 57 defensive plays, Louisville gave up an average of 5.05 yards per play. And then on three plays, they gave up an average of 65.6. Those three plays really just completely changed the game. They allowed Miami to front the entire time. But just give me, I know we're all a little bit more down today or going into the weekend, but how much does this your overall view of the season and your overall view of this game?
I honestly, even though the final score and kind of the way the game played out to where, you know, the game was almost over, you know, at the beginning of the fourth quarter, it seemed like, and Miami pretty much controlled the game. I don't think it really affects my outlook for the season. I still think offensively, you know, we're going to be fine. I actually thought they played decent offensively. There were some third downs that they missed. We had not a lot of penalties, but just some penalties at bad times that really kind of set us back a little bit. But man, I mean, the defense, that was very disappointing. You know, were we outclassed? I mean, from the eye test, I have a hard time admitting that, you know, we're on the same playing field as Miami as far as athletes and talent. So obviously, it seems like we need to hit the recruiting trail, which, you know, I know the coaches are doing at the moment. But to not, you know, be lined up correctly on defense or to give up these big plays, especially, you know, after scoring twice. The first year, I understand it. You know, you're in a new defensive scheme and stuff like that happens. But to have it be the second year and we have a lot of these same guys back, there's no excuse for that. That's Brian Van Gorder shit. It's just something that really pissed me off, and it kind of stuck in my craw pretty much the whole night. So they obviously need to get that fixed. Obviously Satterfield addressed in his press conference. He said, hey, if we line up correctly and they beat us, they beat us. But we can't, you know, be giving up these big plays by either giving up the edge or not being lined up correctly, you know, whatever it is. But that was very disappointing to me.
I think it's where all Louisville fans are. I think it's one thing to use Satterfield's quote, if you line up against those guys and they're just better than you for four quarters, which, I mean, if you take those plays away, does Miami still probably win the game? It seems likely, but it would have been much closer for sure. But the fact that it looked like 2018 and it looked like 2017, where we're just not covering dudes. Like, that was the – if you wanted to look at one thing from the defense last year and say – this is encouraging, this is a sign that it's going to be better moving forward, I think you looked at the fact that more, like, basically the entire season, you didn't have those types of gigantic broken plays. You had bad coverage, you had bad tackling, but that stuff is fixable with better players and a solid system and continuity within the defensive coaching staff. This was, it felt like a throwback to those, the Brian Van Gorder and the, you know, Sermon years and even a little bit of the late Grantham years when he stopped caring because he hated Petrino. Like, this was, it was, and the one that really, I think, killed the whole evening was, I guess it was the last one, but Louisville comes out, starts the second half, impressive drive, they score, they get momentum, Miami scores first play, that sucks, but then Louisville answers back. Like they get off the mat, they drive back down the field, they score, and you're thinking, okay, it's a game. Like, let's just play it right. And then for Miami on the very, very next play to have the exact same thing happen again, to have a wide receiver totally uncovered, that was the one where I felt like, you know, all the fans, even the team, kind of had their backs broken, and it wasn't going to be our night after that moment. Malik Cunningham, again, he was good enough. I know he misses the touchdown pass, the wide open pass to Ian Pfeiffer in the first half, but he certainly was good enough in the second half to win that game if the defense just plays well enough. But I don't know. I mean, I guess how much heat do you put on Brian Brown? Because there's a part of me that says, look, our big issue defensively, or at least a big portion of the issue defensively, was the lack of continuity amongst the coaching staff, having four new defensive coordinators in 4 new years. To even be saying that, you know, there needs to be pressure on this guy seems to fly in the face of all that we need a guy to be here for multiple seasons and to really make his mark on the program and get his guys and all those other cliches. On the other hand, like, it's year two. You've got a lot of the guys that were on the field Saturday night were a lot of the guys that were on the field for major snaps last year. To not know what your assignment is, to not know that you're in charge of holding the edge, not know that you need another cornerback on that side of the field when they've got 3 split outs, that stuff should be fixed. Like, that should not be the stuff that we're dealing with. And that does fall on the head of the defensive coordinator. And Brian Brown, I'm not saying that he needs to be fired right now or that he needs to pick it up or he's going to be fired at the end of the season, but he deserves to be criticized. I mean, I don't think that that's too harsh. Am I wrong?
No, I definitely agree. I mean, I sent you some texts. I was very upset with Brian Brown after the game, but I mean, from what you hear from national pundits around college football, they think this guy's an up and coming star. As far as Scott Satterfield with his coaching staff, it seems like he's, you know, been great as far as hiring so far and who he's brought in. So I'm still going to give Brian Brown and Scott Satterfield the benefit of the doubt for this one. Again, you know, I know we're a little bit undermanned on defense. We need to get some recruits in there. But that can't happen again, obviously. Being able to set the edge, that's something you do in grade school. I think just about every grade school or high school coach knows that. And to, you know, obviously we had that one, getting our safety sucked in on the, you know, the run pass play action there and then not being lined up, which I believe I saw a breakdown of that on Twitter. It looked like we had Lovie Jenkins in there, which was cool to see. I'm glad that he's getting playing time because we're obviously struggling at the safety spot. But he was actually the one that noticed the busted coverage and was trying to get everyone else lined up. And it was obviously too late when they hit the long pass there. But, yeah, I mean, you definitely have to hold him accountable. You know, we're going to face some good offenses the rest of the year, so we'll see how we progress from here.
Yeah, I don't know exactly. I know there have been some conflicting takes on who was to blame for the three big busts, but I think it's safe to say Isaiah Hayes had a rough night just overall, like just out of position, and then even when he was in position, not being able to make plays. And I know he didn't play poorly against Western Kentucky, but that was a night that he'd like to forget. And he wasn't alone. It certainly wasn't all him, but yeah, it was just it's not a good look on national TV to have three plays where you're just legit not touching the guy who winds up going to the end zone, and that's what happened to Louisville on Saturday night.
And one more thing, and Keith will probably be able to explain this better next time you have him on, but man, it just seemed like so much like Miami, besides the penalties, I thought looked well coached. They were prepared for what we were going to run on third downs. And on defense, they attacked what I guess they thought was our weak spot, which was outside the boundary. A lot of screen passes. You know, it seemed like we were playing way off in coverage and we didn't adjust at all. So I got to give credit to Miami's coaching staff. It looked like they were, you know, prepared. And I mean, they were better than I thought. I thought King was really good. And I thought their field goal kicker was amazing. As well, so they're going to be a force to be reckoned with, I think, in the ACC.
Yeah, the kicker, just real quickly, is that the greatest college kicker in the history of football?
that was unbelievable. I was like, I mean, the one was good from like at minimum like 65 yards.
First of all, like he and the punter looked like they could just beat up anybody's middle linebackers for the entire. Like, they look like the badass dudes from Training Day. Like, they are just incredibly intimidating. And then he gets out there, and he hits I knew that he was good because they talked about how good he was at FIU, but I didn't – I mean, I wasn't expecting him to just destroy a 57-yard – I mean, he put spin on the ball, like, from 57 out. It was awfully impressive. And, like that kind of set the tone right off the bat. Like, when we thought we had a big stop – like, I'm expecting the punt team to come out – and then he just comes out and drills that to make it a 20-6 game. Like they were real solid across the board. You mentioned the quick outs to the outside. I think that's something Louisville's going to have to get fixed because teams are going to continue to attack it. I know it's a big part of Clemson's offense, but you're seeing more and more teams run those quick outs to try and pick up, you know, just chunk yards because it's easier for a lot of those teams if you're going up against safeties that maybe aren't big or aren't great at tackling to get 3 or 4 yards on that play than it is to run for 3 or 4 yards up the gut. And Louisville, the middle of the defense actually played pretty well. Like they had spies on De'Aaron King for most of the night, and King didn't hurt Louisville at all with his feet. He only rushed 8 times for 9 yards, but it was really just his arm. He's really, really good. But if you wanted to point to something positive defensively, I thought they did a good job of not letting him, you know, extend plays or on design runs, get loose and make plays in the open field. And really, Miami on the ground didn't hurt Louisville at all. The only reason Cameron Harris had the 9 carries for 134 yards and a touchdown was that 75-yard touchdown run. Outside of that play, Louisville's rush defense was really good. But the secondary's got to get better. And I know we've been saying that for what feels like the last 4 years, but it's pretty obvious. You need dudes there who can not just cover deep, who can not just prevent you from getting beat with a long ball, but who can step up and make tackles in the open field because the secondary's tackling was really poor against Western, and it was even worse against Miami. So clearly needs to be improved. We also, speaking of Western, they lose to Liberty at home. That's not good. Like, that seems a little bit concerning.
That was part of the bad vibes early day when we were like, all right, like sports really aren't going away. We saw the Western score, and then we saw the line for the Louisville-Miami game just do a complete 180, and I was like, okay, maybe Vegas knows something here.
If we're looking at other positive things, I mean, Javian Hawkins, as good as advertised, against a real physical Miami defense, the little guy, 27 carries, 164 yards, one touchdown, had that fantastic 19-yard touchdown run where he spun out of a couple of tackles. And that's the thing about him is when you see his size, when you see he's 5'9", 165 pounds or whatever he is, you assume that he's just this, you know, elite guy who's going to break big plays, but doesn't make a whole lot of, you know, doesn't get a whole lot of yards after initial contact. And that's not true. He's really good at breaking tackles. I mean, again, if you're pointing to something positive, Malik's second half play was good, but I feel like Javion Hawkins, the biggest bright spot of Saturday night.
I completely agree. And he did it, like you said, he was physical, and Miami's a physical defense. He ran through the tackles, you know, he ran up the middle, and then obviously his touchdown run where he was able to kind of spin out of trouble and bounce it outside was one of the more impressive runs that we've seen from him here. So, yeah, I mean, he's the total package. We're totally lucky to have him, and I honestly think, and I think the coaching staff knows this, he's kind of the example. I think that Scott wants the players to kind of take after his, the heart he was showing there in the second half.
I did love that Kelly Dickey pointed this out a couple of months ago. With the NCAA saying that everybody who plays football this year is retaining a year of eligibility, like nobody's burning it, because he, you know, he redshirted and then he played last year and he's playing, like he still currently has 4 years of eligibility remaining. Like we could have JV, and I don't think we're going to, but we could have JV and Hawkins through the 2023 season if he wanted to stay here for a total of 6 years. But he is awfully good. If he did say, I think he'd break about every record that the school has. Hassan Hall, nine carries for 37 yards. He got dinged up. He's listed as day-to-day right now, and that's going to be a pretty big blow because there's not a whole lot of experience behind those top two. As good as those two guys are in the backfield, Maurice Berkeley is, I mean, he's not really a game breaker. He's played a little bit. Aiden Robbins got his first action, at least with carries of the season, the Manual High School product, two carries for 6 yards. We need Hassan Hall better, not just for depth at running back, but also he's a help in the special teams as well. But I guess if we're looking at other bright spots from Saturday night, Tutu Atwell, after a little bit of a quiet game against Western, he leads the receiving core, 8 catches, 114 yards, 2 touchdowns. Dez had a good game as well, made a bunch of catches outside. The bummer was Ian Pfeiffer, not just not getting that fourth touchdown catch early in the game, but when he finally did make a catch, he got stopped short. For the first time in his career, Ian Pfeiffer caught a pass that wasn't for a touchdown, and he got fucking destroyed.
That was, yeah, I thought for sure live that was a helmet to helmet. And then, like, you went back and looked, and credit the guy. I mean, he was just an absolute monster and led with his shoulder. But, yeah, he that was what you call a depletion there.
If you're going to see the touchdown streak end, like, at least don't almost get killed in the process. Like, at least make it like a cool catch or something like that. But instead, the streak ends with just an absolute level. The only other thing that kind of I thought was interesting about this game, and I know it's so hokey and it's so like fan and it's so surface level, but I talked with Keith about it in the last pod, and he kind of agreed with the notion. Miami talked so much shit in this game, and I feel like since Scott Satterfield got here, the two teams that we've played that have kind of been the swaggiest, like the talk shit, who tried to kind of bully Louisville, have been Miami and Kentucky, and those have probably been now the three worst performances we've seen from Louisville against teams. Clemson's on a different level. Like, they don't do that stuff, but they're Clemson. Like, they're the number one team in the country. They're arguably the best football program going right now. But if we're talking about everybody else, the only teams that have kind of had that mentality against Louisville have been UK and Miami, and the results have been bad. Like, is this a thing where we need a little bit more, I don't know, like dogging us, or we need some more enforcers, or again, it sounds like such a terrible fan take, but maybe there's some legitimacy to it.
Yeah, I mean, you could be right, or, you know, it might just be that those two teams were full of athletes and real good. But I mean, sure. It certainly didn't look like that. I mean, I don't even want to say we didn't match their intensity, because I thought, besides like those coverage busts, you know, we'd be in a dogfight with him. It'd be a good game, but just from how much they were talking, and you know, they had a couple late hits out of bounds, and yeah, I mean, obviously those are penalties, but sometimes those can be a good thing, you know, depending on the flow of the game. So I don't know. I think that's too early to tell. I think if we see it again, then yeah, maybe it's something that we have to address. But I don't know if that's how Scott Satterfield wants his guys approaching games. You know, I'm not in the locker room, so I don't know what he thinks about that. But You know, as much as I hate it, you got to credit Miami. If they're going to be loud and talk shit, and you know, they backed it up. So you got to tip your cap to them. Now, if they did that and got their ass handed to them, they'd look pretty stupid. But yeah, we'll see going forward, kind of, because that's a good point that you bring up, because I noticed that how much they were barking on the sidelines. So going forward, we'll have to see if there's a little bit more of an edge to Louisville when they come out. Maybe like not to pass Bobby Petrino, like just stupid shit talking levels, but you know, maybe just something to fire the team up and try to match the intensity of the other team they're playing.
Yeah, Miami finished the game with 11 penalties for 89 yards. It felt like a lot more than that just because, well, I think most of those penalties happened when the game was still kind of in question, but they also were real visible, real stupid penalties. Like you said, late hits, you know, roughing penalties on the field. You had the dude for the defense who, you know, flipped, I think it was Adonis Boone, flipped his leg over. Just real obvious, real dumb penalties. Manny Diaz wanted to clean it up after the game. So to have all that happen and still to lose handily was tough. And then after the game, you've got the Miami players not leaving the field, kind of going at it with our guys, the coaches having to get involved. You had the kid who had the long touchdown run, Harris, who threw the L's down right when he crossed the end zone. Like, just all that shit just piled up, and it made me you know, dislike that program and their annoying fans even more. But at the same time, like you said, you're allowed to do that when you're taking it to the other team, and that's exactly what Miami did. The only other thing that I think warrants kind of discussion here, if we're being a little bit critical about what went down on Saturday night, the clock management. I didn't like what Louisville did at the end of both halves. It goes back a little bit too. And I don't think you and I or Keith and I discussed this on either podcast last week, but at the end of the Western Kentucky game, like running Mikhail Cunningham and letting him take multiple shots with no time virtually left on the clock and a two-score lead, I think was something that a lot of fans didn't really understand and didn't like. And at the end of this half, Louisville's got the ball deep in its own territory at the end of the first half. I mean, you either make an active attempt to try and put points on the board, or you take a knee. And Louisville did kind of the half-measure deal, which really annoys me. They ran plays, they ran a screen, they ran a straight give, and Hassan Hall, I think it was, ended up fumbling in Miami. If Miami had returned that, I don't know if I would have made it back to the second half. But the end of the game is what concerned me a little bit more. Louisville gets down 13. They recover a great onside kick. Whoever the place kicker did a fantastic job. And they act like they're not down two scores. Like, we have a run play on first down. There's no urgency. There's no getting up to the line of scrimmage. Malik ends up fumbling. But just, like, what are we doing here? Like let's at least play like we have an attempt to win the game. If you score quickly there and you get another onside kick, like, that's at least a shot to win. Let's not act like there's zero chance. I don't know if that bothered you as much as it bothered me.
No, it totally did. I had kind of given up on the game, and then when they got the onside kick, of course, like, it was some sort of glimmer of hope. And it just, like you said, when they ran the run play, I got so pissed off. I was like, what are we doing here? But yeah, I mean, I don't know, that the end of the first half, like you said, you know, the kind of the tweener, like, if you're either gonna, in my opinion, you should either take a knee and head to the locker room, or, you know, let's try to throw the ball downfield and make a play. But it almost led to a disaster. But yeah, I mean, we don't want Mikhail taking unnecessary shots for a couple of reasons. One, I mean, he's obviously proven he's one of the better quarterbacks in the ACC. But two, through two games, we haven't got our backup quarterbacks any sort of time yet. I mean, Evan Conley hasn't played. And correct me if I'm wrong, I guess Juwan passed. Did he not dress this past game? I'm not sure, but
he didn't miss this past game, and he is, I think Satterfield said this week that he is going to be, I guess, he's dealing with some personal stuff, but he thinks he's going to be available this week. But even if he is, Evan Conley's now listed as the primary backup quarterback.
Yeah, and I feel like it through a couple games last year, you know, we had not only given, obviously, Juwan got some reps, and then Mikhail eventually took over, but we had gotten Evan Conley some reps as well. So, you know, hopefully in these next couple games, I know Pitt obviously might not be one where you're able to get him some reps, but we're probably going to need him at some point. It's hard for a quarterback to get through the year healthy, but we don't need him taking unnecessary shots if he doesn't have to, obviously.
So we're down right now. I think the good thing about, if you're a Louisville fan looking for a bounce back or looking for reasons to be optimistic moving forward with the season, Louisville was really good in bounce back opportunities last year. They didn't lose games on back-to-back weeks. They were some of the best football was played in the week immediately following a loss. And in fact, Scott Satterfield coach teams haven't lost consecutive games since all the way back in 2017. And it's a big deal because this week Louisville's going to play another ranked team. And I know Pitt probably wouldn't be ranked if we had Big Ten teams in the rankings and Pac-12 teams in the rankings or whatever, and we wouldn't be either. But still, they're 21st in the country. They've got one of the best defenses in not just the ACC, but I think in the entire country. Paris Ford is an absolute stud. And Louisville's an underdog. They're going up there, and Pitt is kind of treating this game the way that we treated last week's game. They've got these special black uniforms. They've been really hyping up the game. Their fans are, I think, at least the ones who cover the team, have been way more excited than Louisville fans have been this week. And it's that noon kind of sleepy, sneaky kickoff time. This is a kind of a – I know we're all still licking our wounds here. This is a pretty big game for Louisville if they want to wind up having the type of season – that so many thought they were going to have going into it, and that all of us obviously want them to have. I mean, this feels pretty important. Am I just overhyping this?
No, not at all. And I mean, I think the past couple of years, Pitt hasn't had a ton to get too excited about. So for them to start out 2-0 and do it in dominating fashion, I think this is kind of what they envisioned when they brought in Pat Narduzzi from Michigan State. And remember, Narduzzi was actually a candidate for Louisville the first go-round when Bobby Petrino came back for his second stint. I remember, I think that was the guy I really wanted because his defenses at Michigan State were amazing at the time. And I was, I mean, obviously at the time I was happy to get Petrino, but I thought Narduzzi would have been a good choice as well. But obviously it looks like he's got the defense playing well right now. You know, they have put up points the first couple weeks, so we're gonna have our hands full. We're gonna have to obviously clean it up on defense and make sure that we play a clean game on the offensive end, but it should be a good game. I'm really looking forward to it.
All right, do we have a Dan in the Dump story for this week, or is Saturday night's game sufficient?
Well, what's funny is you talked about how all the sports on Saturday just went down the shitter like immediately. Well, it actually like didn't really start happening till like almost at like 3 o'clock, like Western lost. And I was like, ooh, that's kind of a weird score. And Patrick Reed was even through nine. Well, then my phone died and we were out on the boat in the middle of the lake. And the guy that was driving our boat couldn't get it started. It was our friend Mark. And so we thought like the engine flooded or something. It was a boat that we rented and we just drifted out in the lake for a good like hour waiting on someone to come like, you know, tug us in. And my phone was dead. I was like, God, I mean, I want to get back for the game. What the hell is going on here? Well, turns out our buddy Mark, not to throw him too much under the bus, cause it wasn't his boat. There was like a little like start button, like, that he had accidentally like pushed off, that it was just a flick of the button. That's all it was, where we could get the boat started again. So we had like 12 kids on this big houseboat to where, you know, they're crying, wanting to get back there. And like, finally, like the guy comes out and just presses a button. He's like, there you go, man. I was like, oh, well, that's it. So then like I get back and I like charge my phone, turn on the TV. Patrick Reed is +8 on the back nine. I was like, what the hell's going on? And then obviously, you know, the Louisville game started and that fiasco. So, yeah, obviously, I'm not a big, like, experienced boat driver, but I'm going to pin that on my friend a little bit.
The one button push fix, I feel like, is what happens every time I have to call in a professional for anything. Like, it's – I go out of my way. We've had problems. Our heating and air conditioning unit is super old, so we've had problems since we've moved in. I will spend, like, 10 hours watching YouTube videos or trying to fix something just to try and avoid having to call. Shout out to Weber Heating and Air Conditioning because they always come over and get it fixed, because I know – that like, I'll do all the steps. I'll look at everything. And I know when I call this guy, he's going to come in and in 5 seconds have it fixed. And it's exactly what happens every time. It's so obnoxious. But shout out to Mark.
I mean, obviously, me and you, when it comes to like being handy or like fixing stuff. Probably not going to be like the guys like on a YouTube channel where you watch like a video of like how good they do it. We're like near the bottom of being like handyman fix it guys. But yeah, the boat thing, obviously a little bit of an embarrassing moment.
All right. So we got, sorry, I'm having a cough attack.
It's like, are we still alive? Are we live here?
We're going to cut it. We're done. Podcast is over. We got Louisville and Pitt coming up on Saturday. I'm going to have Keith on at some point in the next couple of days to preview that. But Dan, any parting thoughts, or do you just want to get cut off saying go Cards?
Yeah, no, let's get the W on Saturday, get some good vibes going back through the program, through the fan base, and yeah, let's just come out firing Saturday.
All right, new pod coming later this week. Until we talk to you then, go Cards.
Go Cards.
Today's episode is brought to you by Cars.com. With over 2 million vehicles and 50,000 more added every day, Cars.com will match you with the perfect car for you, your budget, your life, your style. And if you're ready to say goodbye to your current car, Cars.com will get you an instant offer to cash it in. Just start by entering your license plate and get matched with a local dealer who will write you the check. So whether you're looking to buy or sell, just go to Cars.com. It's magical.